This is tape recording number 6012C31AHMC special. A lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard to delegates at the Anatomy of the Human Mind Congress on the 31st of December 1960. The title of this lecture is A Talk on South Africa. It is 60 minutes long. Copyright 1960 by L. Ron Hubbard, all world performance rights reserved. This recording has been re-recorded by HCO Tape Unit, St Hill Manor, East Grinstead, Sussex, England.
Thank you. Well, this is just about the most gimmicked first day I think you've ever seen, isn't it? Yeah, well, that's because I'm getting my havingness up, you know. You're about to see some various oddities again. And then there'll be nothing tomorrow. You're going to do nothing tomorrow. First, before going much further, I had better tend to business here a little bit. I have some data that you might be interested in, which is not basically Scientological, but which has quite a bit to do with Scientological data. I have been down in the most controversial country on Earth today, which is South Africa. Would you like to hear a little something about South Africa? Okay. What are we doing about some slides here? We set up for some slides there? You're going to have to clear some people out from in front of you in order to show them? Won't take but a moment. Sit down on the floor. You're just ACC instructors. All right, let's see some of these slides here. Let's down these lights a bit. Incidentally, I guarantee nothing here on these slides. You want to bring this in just a bit here? Well, all right. You know, I haven't got my union card. How's that? More? There you go. You should be able to see that. We might even straighten it out for you. Okay, let's down these lights here. Fernando! He went on vacation. Huh? Get the stage lights, Fernando. There we go. Okay, Bonnie, put her on here. Let's see some pictures. Probably some of these are upside down. We weren't able to get a magazine projector. There you go. Did you get Bonnie, too? Plug Bonnie in. Last time we showed slides here, we showed the same one about 12 times, if I remember rightly. Kept me holding up the whole lot. There you go. Tune it in. Tune it in, Bonnie. Can you see it? That's the elephant. Okay, show them another one. Could you see that? There you go. How do you like that, huh? Pretty good, huh? Okay, Bonnie, show him another one. This is not a magazine projector, so it's a mess. How do you like that? He just posed by the hour. Okay, show him another one, Bonnie. A friend of mine. Fastest animal in the world, a cheetah. Okay, Bonnie. Now, these chaps here are Africans. They have a mission. They want to dance. About the best you can say for that. But as soon as they get their vote, it'll all be different. It'll all be different. Then they can dance. Show them another one. There they are. You like that? Yeah, they're nice people. Perfectly all right. I asked one of them one day, I said, would you like a vote? And he says, no. And I said, oh, come on, you certainly want a vote. And he said, no. And I said, well, why don't you want a vote? He said, well, me buy sunglasses from an American last year, me get gypped. Okay, buddy. There's one of the new magistrates that they'll elect when they finally get the vote. Probably require that the court be paid two skulls or something of the sort. Okay, Bonnie. Now, this is the head of the Communist Party, South Africa. The other day, by the way, there was a information pamphlet came out by the government of Borneo which told people to be nice to their snakes. Snakes don't like to be pointed at, and they don't like to be yelled at or stamped at, so please don't bother their snakes. Go ahead, Bunny. Okay. One rhino. The light wasn't so good. There was no wink flash available. But they don't give you much time to get your photography in line. Okay, Bunny. There's a little fella. He's just a little baby. Okay, Bonnie. And this is a beast known as the ostrich. And without this beast, why, you couldn't possibly have ostrich feathers, so be glad he exists. Okay, Bonnie. Now, this will be the new communist premier. This is the only person who will win in this new struggle for Africa, a vulture. Okay? And this is his friend. Nice shot, that, isn't it? Huh? Okay? That's the vulture. There's a nice one. Animals are nice down there. Okay, buddy. That it? All right, that's all the slides. Well, I just thought you'd like some local color. The veteran photographer and so forth. You think I took all those pictures? Actually, I didn't. But they're nice pictures. The most controversial spot on Earth today probably is South Africa. And the only reason I would like to talk to you about South Africa is because it points out something which you yourself should be tremendously aware of in the United States and England. You should be so aware of this. Can you kill that PA a little bit? You should be tremendously aware of the dangers involved in propaganda. The entire communist campaign is being conducted with propaganda. The campaign in its entirety is propaganda. The only shocking thing about the South African situation is just this, that not one word of truth has been written in the northern press about South Africa from the first days of the beginning of this campaign. Now, you don't have to take my word for it. Actually, if you went there yourselves, and if you had nerve enough and energy enough to go around and look at all of the areas and all of the spots in South Africa that have been talked about, and talk to all the people without reserve in this situation, you would then be able to appreciate the extreme truth of what I have just told you, that not one word of truth has been published in the northern press concerning South Africa. Not one word. Name anything. Anything that has been said about South Africa. Anything. I can give you prima facie evidence that it is not factual. What is fantastic about this whole picture is that these statements occur uniformly and regularly on a planned order throughout the press of the Northern Hemisphere. I'm pointing this fact out to you for just one reason only. That if you can believe this and believe these things about South Africa, then you must also be getting fed a tremendous amount of publicity and propaganda about America and England, which is also false, and which is planned exclusively and completely in the propaganda ministry of Moscow, and is fired off on schedule through some of the most unlikely and unsuspected voices. I'll give you an example. A minister in England said, he wasn't very high in the government, but he said, there's one thing you can be certain of about South Africa. That there is going to be a great explosion. And simultaneously, this same statement was being made by a man by the name of Moss, who is a senator from Utah in the United States. And it was also being made in four or five other quarters. Always the same statement occurs in many places and is then replaced by a new statement, which is made in many places. And it's then replaced by a new statement, which is made. Who plans these statements? Now, you can't watch this thing without becoming aware of the fact that there is an orderly, organized propaganda campaign going on against the free governments of Earth. And because certain things can be blown into being as, quote, great truths amongst the populations of the Northern Hemisphere, actions are taken which are favorable to the people who are enslaving Earth at this particular time, the communists. I am not particularly against the communist. I am only against the slave maker. I am only against the liar, the cheat, and the thief. I don't like these people. It's a peculiarity on my part. Now, maybe you don't like some of the things I'm going to tell you in this lecture. But may I preface them by a letter I received just immediately before my departure from the Minister of Defense of South Africa in Pretoria. Dear Dr. Hubbard, as a South African, I can only express my appreciation for the stand you are taking, not on the side of white South Africa, but on the side of truth. Thank you, J. Fauché. I know many of the cabinet ministers of South Africa. These men are some of the hardest working government officials you ever cared to meet. They're very sincere. The only weakness they have two weaknesses. One is security. They do not push security home. They are too decent. And two, information. They do not conduct a comparable propaganda campaign to the communist campaign which is launched against them. These are their two weaknesses. They have no other weaknesses. Just as you are prepared to forgive people that you consider friendly and decent some of their sins, so was I prepared to forgive the government of South Africa some of its upsets when I went down there. I knew they had a hard time. I knew they only had about 3 million whites and they had 15 million Bantu. I knew they were trying to handle themselves particularly. I'm not against the Bantu. I'm not against the black man. As a matter of fact, I'm probably more friendly toward the black man than any person in this audience. I don't want him thrown in over his head as he's been thrown in the Congo by the propagandists of the State Department of the United States in Moscow. 200 Balubas a day are dying of starvation at this instant. 300,000 of them will die. Why? They didn't even know what a vote was. They didn't even know what self-determinism was. But all of a sudden, they were told, "We now abandon you. I don't care how you talk about this thing called freedom. There is freedom and there is abandonment. And the United States and other countries is following the policy today of abandonment of the black man. They don't care to put out the money by which he can develop himself, train himself, and go forward, subsidize himself until he can stand on his own two feet. So they abandon him by telling him it's free. And that's the source of all this talk of freedom. Now, there are other ways to do this. Right now you tell me, well, the government of South Africa does not permit the black man a vote. He doesn't even know what a vote is. What do you want, another Congo? But the untruth of that situation lies in this. The Bantu administration of South Africa is working as hard and fast as it can in the direction of giving the Bantu a vote, in spite of the fact that most white South Africans are upset by the fact they're going to be outvoted someday if this program is permitted to go all the way through. Now, does this sound like a bad government that is denying people a vote? How far do your kids have to walk to school? Well, a Bantu child only has to walk a maximum of a half a mile to school. How do you like that? In the locations and townships, there's a school every half mile. We're told that they will not permit the Bantu to be educated. I walked into a high school, a Bantu high school. And I thought, well, what are they teaching them? I didn't even know that they permitted them to go to high school. What are they teaching them? I was rather suspicious, as a matter of fact. But I was much luckier than a great journalist. One of the things that gets on the government's nerves down there is that every American goes down there and spends 10 days, writes a book or an article. Alsop of the Saturday Evening Post only had to spend 9 days. He's brighter than most. But do you know that in South Africa, he did not go near one government official to write the article he just published in the Saturday Evening Post? He didn't talk to any person or inspect any situation that would have had anything to do with it, and yet he was very knowledgeable, wasn't he? This is very interesting, isn't it? Now look, I'm just a Yank. I'm not expected to be an authority on South Africa. And yet I've become one in Johannesburg. Two white South Africans. Because they themselves haven't bothered to inform themselves of what's going on with the government. Doesn't that sound wild? Now, there's why I say the government of South Africa falls down in the field of information. Now, I went into this high school, and I say, well, they couldn't possibly be teaching them standard high school subjects because I've heard there are even laws in this country against educating the Bantu. I've read this in the press. And what do I find? Euclidean geometry all over the blackboards. Biology. And then the high school principal, a black Bantu, his main interest in life had to do with whether or not Mercedes-Benz cars were better engined with diesel or with petrol. He himself favored diesel, and so his Mercedes-Benz had a diesel engine. This boy took me secretly into a closet and showed me that controversial evolution chart. He said, "There it is, Dr. Hubbard. It's the same Darwinian chart that is taught in England and the United States." I looked at it and laughed at him. It's the same chart. There's no difference. It's out of the same textbook. His main concern was his library wasn't big enough. Later, when I went through a Bantu university where they are specially teaching Bantu doctors and other such chaps and teaching the forward lines of agriculture, the same curriculum used in agricultural colleges here in the United States, I was tagged for an even bigger bid for a library. And one of these days I'll be calling on you to help me give them a library. But the point is, not even the white South African who doesn't stir much out of his city is well acquainted with what's going on in South Africa, and that's what's fantastic, because lying over the country itself is a network of propaganda, and people read the propaganda. The main anxiety of the white South African, however, is not to give the black his freedom, but the fact that he might suddenly be given his freedom because they live with him, and they know very well what he'll do. The communist message to the world is all you have to do is get the European out of Africa and there will be total peace and it will be okay in Africa. What happened when the Belgians left the Congo? Well, that's what will happen throughout Africa. All development in advance of any kind whatsoever will be stopped if the European is driven out of Africa. You can count on it. Now, what I'm telling you probably doesn't make too much sense. What's this? Bantu being educated and Bantu being this and Bantu being that. I myself have handled about 4 street fights amongst Bantu. They don't attack Europeans, but Europeans sometimes have to handle them. But the only riot that I've been a part of, or near riot, was occasioned by a government administrator who said to a bunch of Bantu in a little village, "What's this I hear about all you people wanting the national government out?" And he meant it as a joke so that I would get a backlash and get a kick out of it. And all the Bantu said, "What? What? Who? Who? Who wants to drive the government out? Who? Who?" And they were very upset people, because the Bantu knows very well what will happen to him if he is turned over to total exploitation. The people who want that government knocked in the head are people who wish to exploit the Bantu. The government will not permit the exploitation of the Bantu. The Bantu today, on the average, working in the cities, makes more money than the equivalent British worker in England. His payroll is fantastic. He's divided into 2 classes. He's the city Bantu, and he is the Aboriginal tribesman. And the Aboriginal tribesman is being brought up as fast as he can be brought up to some semblance of order. But he hates other tribes to such a degree that it is always a worry and an upset trying to keep them from killing each other off. That has been the history of South Africa. The blacks kill off the blacks. And all you've got to do is pull a stable government off the top of them and they promptly start killing each other off. The present administration does not permit an Indian or a white tradesman in a Bantu area. They wish to exploit the Bantu. They want to hire him for nothing. They want to sell him at high prices. Does that sound like oppression? Now, you can be right down there in the middle of all this, and you listen to all of the press, and you hear all of this sort of thing. But look, I've dragged through the mountains with the government. I've been in the Rain Queen's country, and I've been through the locations, and they didn't keep me from seeing anything. As a matter of fact, they kept pushing me in deeper. You know, take a look, take a look, take a look. Here's probably the greatest resettlement project on earth is going on in South Africa right now. They won't permit these Bantu to live in slums. They are resettling them, and they're giving them decent homes. Well, if you saw it on TV, there's a picture of it, by the way. One of these resettlement areas is hanging up back there with me looking at it. As far as you can see in all directions from a watchtower, they have built homes. They go to them at high express urban electrical lines that go out to these things, and they give them most anything you can think of. But you can live right in South Africa and not find out what the government is doing. So that's their frailty. Frailty is information. You can be right there. You can hear all sorts of lies. But that's basically because they don't trust many people anymore. They have had more journalists come down there and look at all these things and then suddenly go back and write the wildest lies anybody ever heard of. They got used to me after a little while, and they got very happy about the thing, and they saw that I wasn't looking for a pitch. They saw I was perfectly willing to look at the situation and see it for what it was, and after that they opened up every door they had. Probably the most modern prison on earth is Leeuwkoop. There, the Bantu is rehabilitated, and its return is only 45%. It has been cut. These figures are approximate. The return has been cut by 45%. This is fantastic. There isn't another prison on earth that doesn't have a much higher return. The return in prison life is usually 80%. But we have to go to a, quote, police state called South Africa to find a prison where the return is only 45%. Social reform is everywhere. But beating these people up, the 3 million, you see, the people are kind of mad in South Africa at the government, but that madness normally generates from anxiety. They don't trust the government to hold the Bantu back. But if you can think of the Wild West in its old days, and let's say there are about 3 million whites out there and about 15 million Indians, and then all the press saying the whites should be killed, what would you think? Wouldn't you think that's an odd picture? Factually, the Bantu is not like the American black man, and you can't understand anything about the Bantu by understanding anything about the American black man. The American black man, in the first place, has been mixed with Indian and white blood over a period of a couple of centuries or less, but has actually been in close proximity to the white man and white man civilization for a century or two, you see, at the least. I mean, the last ones that came have still been in contact a century or two. And for almost a century, he has had, on paper at least, a vote. Of course, the Southerner didn't give him the total run of things, and it's only recently that they've had perfectly or decent or fair legislation with regard to the vote. But this is a different breed of cat. Do you know that the Bantu peoples were not conquered by the South Africans until the slaying of Dingaan in about 1879 or thereabouts. And only then a few of them became associated to any great degree with the whites. The Bantu is the wild man down there. The early associate of the South African was the Hottentot and the Bushman, not the Bantu. The Bantu is not indigenous to the area, but comes down from Central Africa. It isn't his home. He was moving into the area at the same time the whites were moving into the area from below. The history of South Africa is quite similar to the history of the United States, except we fought our revolution in 1776 and won it. And they fought their revolution somewhere in the vicinity of the turn of the century and lost it. And they are trying to make headway now in spite of losing their revolution. But these are good people. They are mostly comparable to American frontier people. They have a high culture of their own. As far from being a police state, they're not even half as tough as the American cop. And you can just go in for all over the place without seeing cops. They don't have enough cops. They don't give the Bantu actually enough police protection. They haven't got enough cops. That's the facts of the case. Now, these sentiments are not particularly welcome to people. But I only call to your attention that I'm only telling you what I myself have observed, having been given ample opportunity to observe it, and I am giving you nothing but what I myself have observed and not anything anybody has told me. It's what I myself have seen. But I've also seen an American newspaper photographer take a playground barbed wire area and take a little Bantu boy and make him go in back of the barbed wire, which was to keep the little Bantu children from getting run over on the street and was wide open, and have him pose there so he could show a concentration camp for children. They won't photograph anything that is happening in South Africa, and they won't really talk about anything that's happening. I'm only telling you what I have seen. I have also seen people in South Africa who themselves had not had energy enough to go out and look at anything, and who themselves had totally erroneous opinions concerning what was going on in the country. I have listened to some of the wildest tales from South Africans you ever wanted to hear about what was going on. They themselves didn't know. And I myself am in the odd position. That's when director of security down there says, "Come home, Yank." He's just mirroring the fact that in any gathering of South Africans, when they want to know what's going on in the government, they ask me. Now, I've driven an awful lot of weary miles, because South Africa's a big country, looking at the country and looking at the peoples and that sort of thing. And I'd say they've got about 50 years to go before they get the South African Bantu up to the same status and level of civilization of the American black. But I will add this. We started a security program just to help the peace of the area. We don't take sides politically. We're humanitarians, not politicians. And the Bantu doesn't register the same on an e-meter as a white. And I have had to start a whole program of research, in addition to everything else I've been doing, trying to find out how to read a Bantu on an e-meter. Because he doesn't operate like an American Negro or like a European. And that's an interesting level of study. As I've told you, I myself have no trouble with the Bantu, for I wish him well. As a matter of fact, they call me Esemaklope in Sangoma. And there's at least one person here who I think knows what that means. It means the white witch doctor. And I have learned some things about the Bantu, his nervous system and reactions, which are of considerable assistance to people trying to get along with the Bantu. And the things they blame him for happen to be native in the Bantu. And his nervous system is not the same as ours. So he gets tremendously blamed and knocked around for things he does differently than we do. It isn't he does them better or worse, but he does them differently. He's built differently. There are certain things you have to do. So I've had to make a considerable study of the Bantu. That study is not completed. And the only thing I can say about it this time is it's arduously in progress. As far as my getting along with the Bantu is concerned, as I say, I get along with him wonderfully. It's very difficult for me not to build up a practice. One of the first things one of the boys... You see, we have tremendous numbers of natives working in the central organization. And we have lots of coloreds working in the central organizations and lots of Europeans. And, of course, the people we have at home, we've got four Bantu there. And these people in the central organization made me a sign. And it has feathers and knuckle bones and Dr. L. Ron Hubbard. And then it says Scientologist. And below that, it says, Esemaklope in Sangoma. I didn't even have to hang out my shingle. Practically any of the yard boys or servants or brothers, sisters, aunts, or cousins anywhere in our neighborhood or anywhere in the central organization's neighborhood are liable to turn up with a sore fist or a limping foot or a hernia or something of the sort and ask me to do something for it. My reputation had gone along way ahead of me, see? And just on the basis of the reputation, I'd say, well, who did you think an evil thought about? They tell me, and their sore foot gets well. The only thing I'm trying to point out to you, I'm not actually trying to sell you the South African government. I could easily do so because I consider these men very able from what I have seen. They're nice guys. I know them personally. They're not as advertised. It's just the only thing I'm trying to tell you is there's these tremendous reports in the northern press concerning a country on earth. And none of these reports are factual. But South Africa has gold and it has diamonds. And I think we're looking at a new type of imperialism. Now, the same thing goes on against America. The same thing goes on against England in various areas. And the same thing goes on against Scientology. The press has ceased to be factual, has ceased to be a reporting medium, and has become a propaganda media throughout the world. Therefore, before you believe anything wild, whether about Scientology, South Africa, or anything else, there's only one thing I ask you to do. And that's to, well, the advice of Minister Fauché. Not necessarily a stand on the side of white South Africa, but certainly a stand on the side of truth. Just because you hear it, it isn't true. Even just because I've told you, it isn't true. Remember that what you see, what you experience, is factual, whether in Scientology or world affairs. And I believe that America can win across the world the moment it recognizes that the sole weapons of the communist are propaganda, and his sole stock in trade are lies, and his sole aim and goal is slavery. We don't hear any more of these countries they have overrun. They have disappeared. What of their talks of freedom of the press when there is no press that isn't government press left in the countries that have been overrun by communism? So let's take a look at the status of things, recognize that the war that we are fighting is a war of information, a war of propaganda, and that the enemy wishes us to believe many things which are not true so he can achieve his end goal of slavery. That's the only thing I'm trying to tell you. What is true for you is what you have observed yourself. And when you lose that, you have lost everything. What is personal integrity? Personal integrity is knowing what you know. What you know is what you know. And to have the courage to know and say what you have observed, and that is integrity. And there is no other integrity. Of course, we can talk about honor, truth, nobility, all of these things as esoteric terms, but I think they'd all be covered very well if what we really observed was what we observed. That we took care to observe what we were observing. That we always observed to observe. And not necessarily maintaining a skeptical attitude, a critical attitude, or an open mind. Not necessarily maintaining these things at all. But certainly maintaining sufficient personal integrity and sufficient personal belief and confidence in self and courage that we can observe what we observe and say what we have observed. Nothing in Dianetics and Scientology is true for you unless you have observed it and it is true according to your observation. That is all. Now, whether or not the impi regiments will be reconvened across the length and breadth of South Africa with total right to kill all other black men, or whether or not they won't be and will continue to be governed, restrained, educated, and brought up to a properly domesticated level before they're let loose, that is a problem which has to do with the men who are on the ground and what they stand up to and what they surrender to, these various factors. But let me tell you right now that if the fondest hopes of many great powers were realized And total determinism was granted to every black in Africa. The black population of Africa would be reduced by 50% within a year. Who is it wants this many men to die? And that's the question you ask. Before the coming of the white man, the population of the Bantu peoples was very small because he kept himself killed off. One tribe would go running over the heads of the other tribe with these very weapons, which I'm holding in my hand here. They wipe out whole tribes, whole villages. They were like armies of ants. They just swarmed and swooped down upon everything and slaughtered every man, woman, and child in their path. Millions of blacks died this way. And the white man came along and kept them from fighting. Started civilizing them. The last time the Bantu did this was 1879. Not even 100 years ago. Now that is something for you to understand. That it hasn't been but yesterday. Who wants all these black men to die? Who are the evil people of this world? Same question. We understand that the world right now is being given a great deal of propaganda on the subject of overpopulation. We are told that we are going to get all overpopulated. Now, is this freedom kick a bid to prevent overpopulation? What is this? But on the subject of overpopulation, I have asked myself several times, who will be the overpopulation? You? Me? The fellow who doesn't agree? Who is the overpopulation? What is this idea that we mustn't have overpopulation? What is this? Where did this come from? I personally, in dealing with plant experiments in England, demonstrated that it would be rather easy to grow about 5 times the amount of foodstuff in England as is grown there right this minute. It would be perfectly easy to do this by erecting dams in South Africa. Only 15% of their land is arable. By preserving their rains and using all their subterranean sources and building up various reactor power units and so on, the country could, well, it could raise, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 times the produce that it's raising right now, and it is very productive. The whole of Central Africa was not productive at all until a few whites went in there and were subsidized by England in order to open up a plateau and grow some things and so forth, and they made progress agriculturally. The Sahara could be recovered again. I remember when it was wiped out, if you'll pardon me for harping on the whole track. A fellow by the name of Belisarius and Justinian wiped them out. It could all be put back together again. As far as that's concerned, all you'd have to undo is some of these silly customs that they use in India and China under the heading of agriculture and get them to grow something, and they wouldn't even feel they were overpopulated. What is this talk about it? It hasn't anything to do with food. Why, we're throwing food in the oceans. Here? Well, it isn't real, is it? If we're at an over-surplus, and we aren't even exploiting the United States to the degree of raising food. So what is this kick called overpopulation? Is it an attempt to keep you from getting another body? Or is it because there are areas of man that just hate man and can't stand to see him around, so they decide that the best thing to do is put out a lot of propaganda that permits him to wipe him out? What is this kick over population? As far as South Africa is concerned, the final thing I will say, which is probably very shocking to you, is there isn't any trouble in South Africa. There isn't any trouble. The only problems they've got in South Africa is the idea that they have problems. There isn't as much crime in South Africa as there is in Washington, D.C. This becomes fascinating because it's probably the most peaceful country on earth. It is peaceful. And the Bantu is working, and the government's working, and everybody's happy, but there are a lot of people around saying, yow, 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 look at all the trouble, look at all the upset, look at all, give them all freedom, and got to go do this, got to go do this, blah, blah, blah. And this is blah. I'm not necessarily approving or disproving the South African policies. As a matter of sober fact, I believe their policy is slightly dangerous. I believe if they bring the Bantu up to a level of civilization and give him a total vote, I believe they'll fall short of bringing him up to that level that they desire and will yet give him the vote and will yet wipe out white civilization in South Africa. I believe that this is a high probability that will occur. But it'll occur because the nationalist people are too kind and too decent, not because they are too rough. The picture is an entirely different picture than one would expect. And it's very amusing to be an American in the midst of South Africa. Very, very amusing. I am making good success learning Zulu. As a matter of fact, while I was at that high school, the English teacher, a black Bantu, looked at me and he said to me, how do you do, doctor? And then he said to his class instantly, you know, about a 40-person teenage class, here is an American, and I am going to ask him to say something to you in American. Now, Dr. Hubbard, would you say something to him in American? Say something to the class. You know me. In Zulu, in perfectly good Zulu, I said to them, well, thank you very much. I am very glad to be here. Good day. And these Bantu sat there, you know, round-eyed. They weren't expecting to hear Zulu, and they heard Zulu. And you never saw a joke fall flatter. They were reading The Hound of the Baskervilles by A. Conan Doyle, which was their lesson of the day. So, I gave them a talk on The Hound of the Baskervilles by A. Conan Doyle in English, even in American. And they were all very erudited. But to this day, I don't think any of them realize that I said something to them in Zulu. But kidding aside on this, the white South African deserves my greatest admiration is, of course, the Scientologists there. The country is full of Scientologists. There are lots of them. And from the government, because it doesn't have any communist infiltration or propaganda hitting it in the teeth all the time, Scientology doesn't get knocked in the head. After I was persona grata with most of the government, the head of the South African Psychological Association decided that we were going too far and got very angry about it and told some people in authority that he was now going to write letters to the Prime Minister and all the cabinet ministers telling them what a bad person I was and what a terrible subject Scientology is. The only trouble is, I had been talking to them via central organizations for years, and for months I had been fast friends with cabinet ministers in South Africa. He didn't get very far. And I think they consider he's a little odd, and he now probably is on the suspect list. But my hat particularly is off to the white South African because he's been pretty scared from time to time. He's been jarred by lying press in his own country and so forth. He's been holding the fort any way he can. And these chaps realize that in Scientology, they have an answer to ability, that a person who can bring control and quietness to his own area is very desirable to have in South Africa, and they recognize that Scientology does this. Scientology right now has in two continents a contest going on. Australia claims it is going to be the first Scientology country on Earth, and South Africa claims that it is going to be. So they can fight it out between them. But these are great people, and that's a wonderful part of the world. You ought to know these people. You would find that of all the peoples of Earth, you would be able to talk to them the easiest. But here we have a very serious lecture to close this particular day on. Probably you're not particularly interested in this particular subject beyond the fact that there could be this many lies told and believe this firmly. about a country which weren't based on fact. But more importantly, I've tried to give you some sort of an idea of what I have been up to. I haven't been doing anything. I've just been observing and making friends. And that's one of the better things to do in the world. Of course, I've been very busy technically, and I've been very busy central organization-wise, and I have a few hats that I wear. But, of course, one of these hats isn't trying to pat South Africa on the back one way or the other. It is just telling you what I have observed about them. These sentiments may not be popular, but ask yourself why they aren't popular. Because I've simply told you that there is a country on earth which has a lot of decent people that are doing their best. And if these words be treason, make the best of them. Well, you've had a very gimmicked up day, haven't you? Lots of gimmickry today. You don't get any tomorrow. In the evening seminar, however, I'm about to have sprung upon you. If the seminar leaders will assemble up here in the dressing room, I will tell them what to spring on you. Because there's a brand new process. Brand new one. And I think you might have a lot of fun, one and all, running it on a couple of seminars tonight. It's a process that does everything. Doesn't necessarily clear anybody. It isn't necessarily an undercut or anything. But it's HAS co-audit process number one. And I think you ought to get used to it because we no longer use on co-audits the processes which we will be using on HGC clearing courses. We've got a brand new series of processes which are used only and entirely on co-audits. I think you might be interested in it. We're going to use some of them on you in the seminars. Well, I hope that I haven't bored you totally stiff with all of the matters of politics and other things. And I hope that tomorrow you will have survived the seminar tonight. Because you are the guinea pigs. If you can't run this, we'll abandon the whole project. Thank you very much for coming to the Congress and for being here today. Be sure to appear at the seminars. I will see you at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon. Thank you.